Hi, this is your host, Lori Moylov with the Limitless Podcast. We're all about this season, dreaming bigger, expansion, creativity. And today we have Pat Turpin that is talking. Not only you have been an innovator yourself, you created a iconic brand, Hawk Chips, and your background as a VP at Costco in consumer products, you've kind of disrupted, in a sense, the food and snack market. And I was wondering, you know, like as creators and creativity, what is some insight like that you've learned over your journey on, you know, being a CEO, being a co-founder? What are some of those like real hard things that you had to deal with creating, but that kind of actually helped improve the brand, improved expansion? What were some of those things?
Sure. Just quick way of background, ex-investment banker, and then a Costco exec. As you noted, launched my own CPG brand, Pop Chips. And now I sit on boards and advise growth CPG companies who are looking to scale. That kind of gave me a series of experiences, right, that taught me, a number of things, right? And banking taught me financial rigor and how companies fund, because without, you know, cash is unfortunately the gas in the tank of the car. And if you run out of gas, the car doesn't work. Same for businesses. Costco, launching businesses at Costco was a very interesting experience in learning how to be an entrepreneur, because at Costco, we would always basically disassemble a business model and say, how could that business be reassembled, completely reimagined to suit Costco's purposes, which in Costco speak is save Costco members money. And so it gave you license to say, well, I don't care how gas stations are run. How could they be run? I don't care how this was done. How could it be done? That's one thing Costco is great at. And that was great. That was a great experience to then being an entrepreneur, because what it told me with my own brand was look for the white space. And, you know, one of the things that I learned to ask is why? Because one of the things that a lot of entrepreneurs who are probably listening to this podcast probably will hear when they have an idea is someone will say, that'll never work.
Yeah.
And I always say, okay, why? Now, sometimes I get a very good answer, right? Sometimes somebody will give me a very good answer and okay, that makes sense. But a lot of times you don't get a very good answer. You get something like, well, it's just not done that way, or everybody does it this way. That actually, to me, is some of the most encouraging words to hear, because that generally means that there's white space that somebody hasn't tackled. And we certainly did that with Pop Chips. My business partner and I launched this snack food brand. At the time, there wasn't a lot of mainstream better for you snacking. And I like to think that we kind of helped usher in what's a pretty ubiquitous trend now, but back in the early 2000s, it didn't exist too much. It starts with a very simple concept. In this case, the white space was consumers want to take more responsibility for their own health and make better choices, but they don't want to feel like they're making a trade-off in flavor. Mm-hmm. And so if you could come up with a snack that tastes like the real thing and has half the fat and calories, you've got a mainstream solution. That was the white space. We then went and set about coming up with a product that accomplished that. But that's an example of, you know, finding that white space. And we were told more times than I can count that it will never work. No one will ever, you know, eat a popped chip. And, you know, right. Luckily they were wrong.
Exactly. And like as entrepreneur and creator, like you kind of get this resistance of a lot of no's and all these pitfalls of kind of being a CEO and creator. How do you kind of get through some of those? Like, as you said, you kind of turn that why into like some of your drive and motivation. What are some tools that you've used along the way that kind of have helped you when you hit those walls?
First of all, that question, why? I ask it a lot. And sometimes I'm asking why 4 and 5 times in a row to dig down to, is there some truth there? Now, I try to be very dispassionate about that. So if there is a real truth, okay, fine. Better that I know that now. But if there isn't, then it actually, like I said, is motivating and encouraging that, okay, that means nobody's looking over in that corner. That's an opportunity for me or for the company I'm working with, whoever that may be. I will say the other kind of tool is, you know, try to surround yourself with people that complement your weak spots, not duplicate your strengths.
So, yeah, I see.
You know, we purposely, you know, created a board of directors for PopChips where we said, what are the skills we really need? You know, and we started from there and then designed a board of people that, so that we could bounce these ideas off of, you know, people in those kind of situations. So it's hard to do everything by yourself, right? It can feel like that as an entrepreneur. You surround yourself with the right team and advisors that, again, kind of cover your weak spots and complement you as opposed to duplicate your strengths, then you have more of a team to kind of get over those hurdles that you're referring to.
And I guess, like, you know, mentorship and advisors and board members, how do you kind of best assess who's the right fit for you or right fit at the moment? Like, you know, let's go back in time, I guess, to like PopChips, you just started. And I guess like how you formulated that.
Sure. Well, when we first started PopChips, we had acquired which is a whole nother story. We acquired a rundown rice cake factory, making rice, store brand rice cakes, which the equipment could be retooled to make a PopChip. That was the whole basis for acquiring that business. But it had operational challenges as well as, you know, okay, you're creating a new brand, there's marketing challenges. And so we specifically said, for the next, you know, few years, our most important thing we need is, first of all, we need somebody very strong in operations that I can lean on because we have our own factory and it needs to scale. On the marketing side, we're going to be trying to go out and market into a very crowded market, chips, with a very small budget. Like, we can't use the playbook of Frito-Lay. We don't have their checkbook.
Yeah.
And so therefore we needed a marketing resource. And so we got very specific about that and then just started talking openly to people. People generally want to help. The more clear you can be about what you're looking for as opposed to vague, the more easily they can help.
Yeah.
And that inevitably led to, oh gosh, you should meet so-and-so. They just, you know, left XYZ company and I know they're looking for board roles. Perfect.
Wow. Yeah. It's like finding the right alignment on your path, I guess, you know, and our listeners are in all creative spectrums, whether they're entrepreneur or a painter or artist. So they're always creating. And I guess for these creatives that are just continuously creating, how do you, like, I guess, formulate the right roadmap, like, you know, for them? Is it finding, as you said, mentioning the, you know, the your weak spot and helping fill that? Is that kind of the best way for a creative or creator?
I guess I would phrase it slightly differently, which is what things have to come together to get to the desired outcome. Well, to use the PopChips example, we had to learn to scale this little rice cake factory into something much bigger. Okay. That's one kind of major challenge. We have to learn how to reach and educate people that there's this new PopChips thing, but we don't have $100 million in advertising. How are we going to, like, that's another major. So you identify what handful of things have to happen for the outcome you want, and then start to work backwards and say, okay, well, we don't have that knowledge in-house. How can we partner with somebody that brings that to the table? And that led to, you know, some very creative thinking, you know, like in PopChips case, one very simple example was we used humor as a way to educate, you know, pithy, funny stuff that caught your attention so that you could leverage a much smaller marketing budget and stand out and be noticed, but you're still getting your message across. That was just one small example of how we got there, but we needed the help of somebody with skills in that area.
And talking about creative scaling, you know, like you got the rice cake shop and you're like scaling and scaling. I guess, how is that process? How do you get from that one step? You built your board, now you're marketing. How did you, you know, continue on in that expansion? What were like the next steps when you're like, okay, we've reached this ceiling. How do we keep expanding?
Constantly looking around corners is the headline I would give you, because you have to be thinking about, okay, great. Now, you know, the brand went from $10 million to $40 million. And now we wanted to go to $75 million. Well, what's that going to take? And in our case, that was an example of, you have to figure out how you're going to build out more production capacity to keep up with that. But at the same time, you don't want to build it too fast, or you got all this overhead. And so you're looking around corners, and at the same time, constantly trying to balance those factors out. How are we going to grow versus how are we going to keep up with the growth? And that requires constant looking around corners and really, really good communication amongst the partners. I can't emphasize that enough. It sounds easy, but it's easier said than done.
Yeah. And speaking of communication, I find like, how do you keep everyone informed? And also as you're growing, you know, you're looking at all those corners, how do you keep that communication stream kind of moving forward and letting everyone know, you know, where the voids are, I guess?
Yeah, that's, different for every company, right? You could be small, medium, or large in how you do it. But, you know, one thing that I'm a fan of in terms of that is monthly team meetings. Not rah-rah sessions, but real meetings like the kind you're referring to, which is, where are we for real? What are the challenges that we're really facing? How are we looking to get to those challenges? And then soliciting that feedback loop. That was actually one thing that I learned at Costco they were incredible at. For a company that large, they would do that monthly, and they'd bring all the senior managers to their head office and have what I like to call straight talk about those kinds of issues. And it made it very clear. Everybody was clear on the priorities and everybody was clear on the mission. That sounds easy, but is also hard to do, particularly the more people you get involved.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, making sure you're aligned with what are the priorities within this list of things that we need to tackle, and then staying aligned with that mission. And as you kind of mentioned, like, you know, having that clarity really drives the punch, because I think otherwise folks don't understand like what the goal is. So I guess, how did you like really refine and make sure that, like, for example, with Pop Chips, like, how did you refine your mission to make sure that everyone was all aligned and made it so clear that everyone didn't have a question on it?
Well, it started with a very concerted effort on company culture. And part of that was coming up with a common language. That may sound weird. Hey, we all speak English, right? But the common language is important so that people understood exactly what we mean by certain things. What does it mean to be a good communicator? That could mean very different things between you and I.
Yeah.
And we both could think we're being a good communicator. Well, we're going to define what being a good communicator is. We're going to define that common language. And then we created, we called it the principles of POP, which were what is our culture? What do we stand for? And it's very practical in terms of its everyday usage. And that's great. You can write it up on a piece of paper, but we had to every single month reinforce it and call out employees that embodied those principles. And we would celebrate them. And they would actually get to then tell the rest of the team what they did that embodied that. And then they got to make a donation to the charity of their choice, something that was kind of near and dear to their heart, as kind of the, you know, reward. But it helped people understand, oh, okay, Lori did this. That really bailed us out as a company. It embodied our principles. That's what they're talking about. It's one thing to say, it's another thing to see it in action. And that took a concerted effort And, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're always don't have enough time. But if you don't make enough time to build your team, you're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. And the culture is kind of what shapes and I guess in a sense kind of expands the brand. And in your example, that was really cool how an employee would, you know, embody, you know, kind of what the culture was, and they got to kind of get rewarded with one of their favorite charities. That's a really cool idea. And in that sense, that takes creativity of finding those ideas to kind of shift and make sure like your culture of your company replicates like what your mission is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if let's just say some of our creators and listeners, they, you know, they're all over the world. Like we have listeners in the UK, Australia, some of them, maybe they're coming up with a product and they're going to bring this to market. I guess, what would you say the first three steps you'd give them?
Bringing your product to market?
Yes.
First three steps is, I would say, be really clear on what it costs you to make that product, and then go out to the market and make sure that what you think you can sell it for will work. So I do that all the time where brands ask me to advise them and I say, sure, give me a week. And I go to all the stores and I say, okay, fine. In a particular category, an item might be selling anywhere from $14.99 to $19.99. Mm. You're telling me you're going to sell for $26? I don't think so. Mm. And where that gets to is, will you have a margin that'll work? Because if you don't have a margin that works, you're not going to solve it through more sales. And you're also going to have a hard time attracting investors. So in most product categories, there are kind of rules of thumb, and they're different for different categories, what kind of margins you should have. So, but if you do that work up front that says, okay, cost me this much to make it, this is the competitive landscape on price. Yeah, I can price it in this range and make an acceptable margin. That's a great starting point. And where you can get creative is if you're running into some obstacles, you can rework your packaging. Okay, I was going to sell a 1 pounder, but to hit the price point of the competition, I should maybe be at 3/4 of a pound. Maybe it's a smaller package and I can hit my margin, and that kind of work up front. I see so many examples where entrepreneurs have a great idea. They launch it without doing what we really, all parts of what we talked about. Maybe their margin's too low. And they get some initial success. And what I hope your listeners, if they're new entrepreneurs, listen to more than anything on this, which is, if you have initial success, that just means you need more capital, because it requires more capital. And at that point, if your margins aren't acceptable, nobody's going to invest. So having that foundation up front, in the world of at least consumer products, which is kind of where I live, is time well spent.
Yeah, very true. Like having that clarity. And for fun, we do this rapid fire thing. Instead of calling it Shark Tank, I'm going to call it Pop Tank. Okay. So let's go. So, okay, would you go with safe or risky?
Oh, definitely risky.
Yeah, I would think that would be a definite. Okay, what about big vision or quick wins?
Boy, that's a tough one. Big vision.
I like that. What about expand fast or scale smart?
Scale smart.
What about gut instinct or data?
Data.
Disrupt or refine?
Ooh, interesting. Boy, it really depends. I've seen both work. So sorry to give you a non-answer. It depends.
So you're like both.
Yeah.
What about trend or timeless?
I'm going to go with trend.
And then what about higher experience or raw talent?
Depends. It depends on the role. I've seen both work in different roles.
Right. Okay. What about go global early or dominate local first?
Dominate local first.
Okay. And then what about one habit that fuels your creativity?
Ooh, one habit that fuels my creativity. I would say looking for white space. I can't help myself when I go into any kind of retail establishment, any kind of store, and I see walls of sameness, my mind goes to, what are they missing? Where's an opportunity for that next entrepreneur?
Oh, I love that. And then what about one fear you had to outgrow?
Ooh, one fear I had to outgrow. Speaking in front of large groups.
What about one risk that paid off?
One risk that paid off. I would say when we were at early stages of Pop Chips, we were just in California. We thought we cracked the code and we know how to replicate old formula, but we didn't have a lot of money. And so instead of going to a bunch of places all at once, we took the entire year's marketing budget, threw it at New York City, and said, we're going to launch New York City in a big way for 6 weeks because that's all we can afford. And then if it doesn't work, we're in deep trouble.
Wow.
But it worked.
I'm so glad it worked. And then what about one idea you killed too soon?
One idea killed too soon. I would say when I was at Costco and we were launching services as part of executive membership, and we tinkered with a lot of different services, insurance. It was just a beast of an industry and very tricky, but I was convinced that we gave it up too quickly because the size of the prize was huge and screaming for disruption.
One wish you went bigger on.
One wish I went bigger on. Oh, boy. I would say building out international at Pop Chips, we exited. My business partner and I exited when we had built out North America and the UK. And the UK was actually incredibly successful. Just one country. But it would have been fun to build out other parts of the world because it's a whole different puzzle to,
yeah.
to crack.
And what about innovation is what to you?
Innovation is the lifeblood of a company. Without it, it dies.
Very true. And then what about founders? Either founders play small when they do what?
Sorry, repeat the question.
Founders, like when you're a CEO or founder of a company, they play small when they blank.
Oh, they play small when they're stuck in the ways that got them to where they are, as opposed to the things they need to do to go to the next level. Those are two very different things.
Yeah. And then what about growth requires letting go of what?
Growth requires letting go of being Superman or Wonder Woman, doing all things. Growth requires hiring and trusting talent.
Very true. And then what about dreaming bigger? What does that mean to you?
Dreaming bigger to me just means not being limited by what others have done, but looking at what the opportunity should be for that situation. The gas opportunity at Costco was a perfect example of that. It became much bigger than anyone ever thought it would be.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a function of reimagining something.
Very true. And innovation. What about what's your boldest move next?
Boldest move next? That's a great question. I don't know, but I'd like to say that one of the companies I'm working with, I'm going to have the opportunity to launch something new with.
And oh, that's exciting.
I hope will be the next one.
Yeah. So our listeners will have to follow you so that they can see what that is. And I guess, like, you know, I ask all my guests, Pat, what this one word connects you to: creativity, being limitless, and dreaming bigger. What would that one word be?
I'd say abundance. And I say that because a lot of people limit themselves to what I call scarcity thinking. And the reality is the market's huge with room for lots of brands and companies and products. So it's a matter of just identifying your tribe, satisfying their needs uniquely, and having the right go-to-market strategy. And so to me, that encompasses abundance thinking as opposed to scarcity thinking.
Wow. Yeah, I love that. I think you're the first guest that said abundance. So yeah, our Limitless listeners, be abundant with your creativity and your goals and what you're trying to expand upon. The one thing that I was wondering is, how can our listeners kind of engage with you? How can they find you? Maybe they want you to consult. How can they find you and connect?
So easiest way to find me is on LinkedIn, Patrick Turpin. Pretty easy to find. And they can DM me or email me at pjturpin20@gmail.com if they want to connect.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Pat. Like, I've learned a lot about kind of how you've scaled, you know, taking pop chips from, as you said, you brought this like popcorn, like this factory, and then you kind of expanded on it. And yeah, I just can't believe about the New York risk. You know, you just jumped in the risk and you're like, we're going to just gamble it. So yeah, thank you. And it's all about the mindset, right? And being abundant. So thanks so much, Pat, for being a guest on the Limitless podcast. And to our listeners, keep being creative, keep expanding, and be abundant with your ideas and go for it. Thanks so much, Pat. Yeah.